Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the AI Business Podcast. I'm Ben Wadecki, and today I'm joined by Abreu Bimboga from IBM. How's it going?
Hi, Ben. All great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on. So today we're talking a little bit about Watson X. Now, for those not in the know, Abreu, could you give us a little bit of an overview of what Watson X is and how it differs from some other AI platforms out there today?
Okay, yeah, sure. But before I start with Watson X, I would like to spend a minute or two on why Watson X. If you don't mind, thank you. So as you know, we are at a unique time in AI, and AI is the opportunity of a lifetime. But here the question is, how are organizations going to take advantage of it? Over the last 5 years, or even a bit more than 5 years, AI adoption has doubled across the globe. But it has mostly been with a plus AI mentality, thinking that AI is an add-on. So what do I mean with that? Everyone has been using their normal technology stack and running all of their processes and platforms as is, and then saying, hey, let's do some AI. It's a good add-on. Let's add it. That's not going to be sufficient, neither for this nor for the next generation. We are moving from the world of plus AI to AI first. So a decade from now on, the organizations that have adopted an AI-first mentality in terms of how they are training their people and how they are putting things into production, while they have a guarded model in place in terms of ethics, bias, and trust, those organizations are going to be the winners of the next era. And IBM understands where AI market is headed, and we are prepared with a 10-year roadmap. So the focus of IBM strategy is foundation models, which is the basis of what's next. That's why we are so proud of this newly introduced AI and data platform that's built for business, which is what's next. And a bit more about the platform. What's next has three main components. Okay, the first one I would like to mention is the what's next.ai. You need a studio, right? A place that you can build. You can think about it from a daily life, or you can think about it from a software point of view. You definitely need a place that you can build or live in, right? That's the studio that you need. And here, the advantage that IBM has is really immense, because this platform, MatsNext.ai platform, gives you the flexibility to build with IBM models that you might have heard, Sandstone, Granite, or you can build with your own models, or as the third option, you can build with open source models, and you can tune your models and with prompt tuning. Second piece of this platform is what's next.data. In the organizations, some challenges never change. And this was a challenge 10 years ago. This was a challenge 20 years ago. So I'm talking about challenges such as how are you going to make your data ready for AI? If an organization is still struggling with notions like, I can't access my data, it's locked in a store, you are not going to survive in this environment. So through what's next.data, search is made easier by using natural language interfaces and also vector database capabilities, which is a big differentiator. And the third one, the last one, but not the least, what do business leaders ask today? What's the number one question? Can we trust this? Can I trust the outcome?
I think it's interesting because from my extensive reading on what's next these past few years, it's the integration of the tools into, you know, an embedded system that, you know, it gives people the ability to actually, you know, just pick up and use whatever they want at ease. My question to you in that is, you know, how have you made it easy for them? Because for me and a lot of other developers, it's about ease of system, ease of access, ease of being able to just install and pick up and go. How have you guys kind of tailored this for that?
It is all related with integrations, right? It is also the holistic approach that you are you have as an organization, as a software vendor or technology vendor. We do not have this rip and replace approach. We are very flexible. It is okay if an organization did not start their AI journey yet, or it is okay if they have started their AI journey in terms of the data side, then we can go and complement them. We can complement it maybe on the trust side, right? Or ethical areas, ethical AI space. We can put guardrails around their models. That is the other area. Or they might have completed, they might have already completed projects applying Gen AI, and they might be looking for new use cases. We are also stepping in there. And the other area that's very important and that differentiates IBM from various other vendors is that we are not the pure developer of software, but we have a huge consulting organization, which is giving advice in terms of business consultancy, as well as deployment of these AI technologies. And not only the IBM consulting organization, but also we have other organizations such as IBM Expert Labs, Client Engineering, where we are going and delivering various MVPs and pilots to the customers in terms of business use cases.
So let's talk about kind of the client side of things. You know, how are they using those AI models in there? And how are they finding using the AI, the IBM dedicated ones, you know, Granite, which... for the life of me, I've tried to find more concrete information on it. You guys have kept it very close. So I mean, I'm keen to kind of work out, you know, how they're using these.
It sounds like that is another best kept secrets for IBM. So maybe I can a little bit mention the overall models
sure.
And how we approach. And maybe I can also mention a little bit what I see in the market as we are sure. In touch with the customers regularly. So IBM adopts a multimodal strategy with what's next. So as I mentioned, clients can use their own models, they can use IBM models, or they can build with open source models, which are very popular, right, nowadays, or which used to be. And when I mention open source models, it can be Hugging Face, it can be Meta's Llama 2. What I would say is that people have played, not everyone, but the majority of the organizations have played with LLMs, large language models, like ChatGPT and others. But as the journey in AI has evolved, when it comes down to it, small language models are the implementation of choice. That is one thing, not for all of the organizations, but this is what we are observing in the market. And Granite is represented in that space. Because there are various reasons why this is the implementation choice. Cost point of view is one thing, because it's way more attractive than the large LLMs. And you want a small language model for a specific task. You don't want a huge LLM for a specific, let's say, financial use case. So bigger isn't always better. And in fact, often the opposite. If you have a special problem related with your, let's say, dermatologist or with your skin, you go to a dermatologist, right? You just do not go to a surgeon. That's not something you do. So you go to the right specialist from the start. And the other aspect is that choosing the models with transparency, because the larger the model is, the less transparency it provides. And most of the organizations do not have problems with everything. They have a specific problem. Let's continue from financial regulations. For example, in the financial regulation area, general purpose models are not the best fit for this. They need a fine-tuned one, which is smaller. And Also, you might have heard another model called Mistral that has been coming up a lot, where you can also use Mistral if you are using What's Next platform. That's also another area where we collaborate with. So now that organizations are aware of the cost and organizations are aware of the importance of having the right model for a specific task or for a specific business pain point, they now go for more governance and transparency aspects of it. And the impact on cost is getting bigger and bigger in terms of considerations. So businesses want a model that they can trust and that's a fit for purpose. Those are really key elements. Another example I can give on these, once again, IBM, I need to highlight that IBM is working with all of these models. Not one of them is best and the other one is wrong, right? Llama, that's one of the biggest generative AI models, right, out there at the moment. Not as big as ChatGPT, and we also support Llama, but still it is huge. Llama understands Western languages very well, but it is not good at some Asian languages, such as Chinese. So not good enough training data for Chinese. These are the different aspects of how customers choose and use, and also where granite or sandstone comes into the picture. I just want to briefly give you the overview of what the considerations are when it comes to choosing the right model in terms of different organizations.
You're giving that flexibility, right? And from that kind of ties into one of my other questions, which is like the developer standpoint, you know, they don't want to just use ChatGPT. They don't just want to use Llama. So giving them that flexibility to try and choose and use, I think he said, that to me is important to giving that option, I guess.
No, definitely. And this also increases the number of needs for business, number of areas where you can apply Gen AI for your business problems, and also for different industries. Let me give a few examples from what we do at the moment in the market, in the UKI market, or across the globe with What's Next. Let me start with an example from UK, NatWest. They are using generative AI from What's Next assistant to make its virtual assistant Cora. I don't know. I think NatWest clients might be familiar with their virtual assistant Cora. So they are making Cora more intelligent, more intuitive, and human-like in how it serves customers. Another example from UK and NHS. The results here are really impressive because NHS is using AI from What's Next platform to reduce the rate of no-shows at appointments. And they have reduced them from 10% to 4%, which is allowing them to help 700 more patients per week to see a doctor. So how does it work? They are using Gen AI from What's Next, and the solution that's in place is also able to review as many client letters for our patients in 18 hours as it will take a human staff to get through in 4 years. This part is impressive, and it is estimated that this solution can reduce the overall waiting list backlog of this trust by 15%. These are really impacts of Gen AI into our life, right? How it's making our lives much better. If I go to another industry, for example, in the sports area, Wimbledon, the US Open, the Masters Golf Championships are using all of these, the foundation models, IBM Foundation models that we have just mentioned, and generative AI from What's Next, to enhance the digital experience. A very recent win, I love this, that's why I really would like to mention it. I don't know if you are a following the Spanish foot clubs, but Sevilla FC, anyone who is a little bit into football might be familiar with this organization. Sevilla FC is now using generative AI from What's Next for recruiting. They are powering their scout advisors with a tool that provides this scouting team to evaluate the potential new recruits using the data. So Sevilla FC's data department worked with IBM's client engineering organization to build a virtual spot advisor, leveraging What's Next natural language processing and foundation models to search and then to analyze the huge amount of information that's present now in the club's existing databases, and then they can evaluate the potential recruits. The other area I would like to highlight is that it is not only searching the quantitative data. So, like, I'm not an expert in football, but not only considering things like the height, the weight, speed, number of goals or number of red cards or any other quantitative metric that is valid in football, but also qualitative unstructured data, such as the textual analysis contained in more than 200,000 scoring reports. That is really an important element that is added to make Sevilla FC more successful. If I move on to other industries, there are so many, but I'm trying to give examples from non-conventional industries that we generally come across with. Grammy Awards. IBM created the AI stories at the Grammy Awards, or Watson is also being used by the NGO, an NGO, Stop the Traffic, to help prevent human trafficking. One very recent example is in journalism, where you might have interest. So What's Next is helping the journalists in Norway to investigate so that they can spend more time to produce more important news. And by saving that time, that is spent on the all of the labor research, hours of researches, and admin work, which you might be also suffering from.
Yeah, you best not give it to me. I don't know what I might find. I think there's one thing that I picked up on it. You guys showcased it last year. It's a very boring use case, but something nerdy like me, I like, and that's the code generation for legacy systems, particularly COBOL, which is older than me. It's a programming language, which might upset some of our audience. What kind of areas can What's Next come in and help on that legacy side? Because that's something that a lot of businesses still haven't resolved with their IT budgets, I can imagine.
Yep. So maybe just to explain a little bit this area where we are supporting the legacy languages, particularly you are referring to COBOL, given the number of ages you have mentioned in terms of the lifespan of the solution. The area that you are referring to is in the developer area, developer space. So we have a model in place that automatically generates codes for developers. Let me explain it in this way. This model lets a user input a coding comment, so a developer can put a coding comment as a straightforward English sentence, and then builds the requested workflow, which can either be accepted as it is customized by the developer, or it can be customized, doesn't matter. So you just write a straightforward English sentence. Imagine the time that's being saved, imagine the productivity increase. So this also enables the automation of lots of IT tasks. That is the area, and this offering we have is called Watson Code Assistant. And when it comes to where else it is applied, we have Watson Code Assistant for COBOL, but also we have it for Ansible, Red Hat Ansible, And the new one is Watson Code Assistant for Java.
Wow, okay. That's good. That's a bit more recent than Kobo, but that's still like really helpful considering the amount of systems that still to this day use Java, which is lots more surprising than I thought. But that's really fantastic. I might have to pick that up for some of my script work. So we've gone through a lot of the use cases, and it's quite wide. Like, I didn't realize how wide it was. You know, in my head, I think of this enterprise usage. I think it's just siloed into that generic systems, but that's really interesting that you've got these kind of different ones. Let's talk a little bit around cost realities of a system like Watson X. Are customers coming to you guys and then taking it money out of their other IT budgets to pay for this, and or are they, you know, being given, you know, blank checks by C executives who want AI? How are you guys looking at the cost of this?
Okay. When it comes to cost, I think it goes beyond. It's not only the money that is spent to buy the software. But in an AI project, you are putting your reputation as an organization at risk. That is the biggest cost, because you cannot recover it. We once again go back to the basic ethical concerns, which is related with the governance part. Organizations really have a big challenge in terms of lack of skills, data complexity, and cost when it comes to implementing and adopting AI. And IBM has a very recent AI adoption index, and these are the findings, right? These three areas, lack of skills, data complexity, and cost. But all of them as a whole are part of the cost, because you need to enable the teams, you need to change the culture. On the data piece, you need to fix your data so that you can make most out of the AI technologies. But overarching, the main problem here is if you can trust the output that you have from AI. If the outputs are accurate, explainable, which is really key, free from bias, and compliant with regulations, then that is automatically a huge ROI for the organization. Because we have various examples of this. Very simple. When you use an open source technology like ChatGPT, when you type, okay, just give me a picture, pull me a picture of the standard Oxford professor. What is the answer? The answer always comes up with a male, white. And white males cannot be the representative of Oxford professors, right? Here we have a huge bias. Or another example, one hyperscaler, the AI tool that one hyperscaler has been used in recruitment activities for that own company, for their own company. And after a while, after using that technology for recruitment, they have started to realize that all of the candidates, and this is a technology vendor, all of the candidates were turning out to be men. And then they realized that as the right governance models were not in place, the tool was looking at the actual employment stack of the company, of the IT vendor. And they just see that the majority of the organization is men, which is unfortunately still something valid for most of the IT organizations. So automatically, the recruitment tool assistant, the recruitment assistant, was eliminating any CVs that has either a photo of a female or a non-male that had anything like participated in a woman's event or got awards in the Mount of Women's History Mount, or anything like was the leader, team leader of the female football team in high school. So all of them were taken out. Think about the impact when this was heard and no one by the broader audience, by the world, imagine the reputation you are losing. So the solution that you have in place should offer a nutrition label for AI. It should allow the companies to show what data and AI models have been used to generate the outputs. So that organization, unfortunately, that I just mentioned, has paid it by making very wrong decisions on the recruitment. If they had seen the data that was used for the outputs to be generated, they would probably stop it. Not even used in, they will be going after the CVs that they were suggesting. And also, the solution you have in place should alert you when it detects any inaccuracies or any biases in the AI models that you are using on the platform. That is something really critical for the business use of AI. And this is something that triggers the overall cost. So not the entry point cost that you spend to buy the software, but we need to look at it from a broader point of view.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And I'm glad that's, you know, front and center of what you guys are trying to do here. I think what's interesting for me is what's next comes from a place where, you know, IBM has been around for, I mean, longer than I have in the tech space. And you've got these new players, these young, hip, OpenAI style people coming along trying to turn the industry on its head, where I'm keen to find out what you guys at IBM are doing to kind of keep competitive in an environment that has these new players coming in and keep them motivated as well on that. How are you guys approaching this?
AI is not new in the history of IBM. It has more than 50 years of heritage. But with the recent developments, we are focusing even more resources into that space. IBM has 19 research facilities across the world, which is spread across 6 continents. That helps us to build all of these governance models, right, which is key. And the IBM Foundation models use the largest known set of enterprise data that has been vetted for legal and safety concerns. This is unique. This doesn't happen in all of the solutions that's in the market now. And again, IBM Foundation models also have a full auditable data lineage available. But this is, again, a huge differentiator. And the number of the investment we are making into this technology in terms of number of people, in terms of what we are doing in the 19 research labs across worldwide, really turns this into a multimodal open platform that gives flexibility and different choices for the clients. Every single vendor do not choose, every single player, especially the new ones, do not support multimodal or open platform approach. They just support either, it is one cloud, or they just support, I'm not going for extended cloud, but I will only go and support for the traditional workloads. So this hybrid cloud approach is unique, which gives flexibility. And the other thing I have mentioned in the beginning is that a client who would like to start the journey, or even if they are in the middle of their journey, they can work with us because we don't have a rip and replace approach. We are very flexible in that aspect. And the use cases we have are all business use cases. So whether you want to plug what's next into your existing systems, or if you want to just have the flexibility about the models that they want to use, you have all of these advantages that is coming with IBM. And also, let's not forget that we are not only a sole software vendor. It's combined, our strength is combined with our consulting experience and expertise. IBM has a huge consulting and expert lab services organization that is also supported by our client engineering teams. That is really huge. And also, I have mentioned the importance of the governance aspect when it comes to responsible AI ethics, the risk you are putting on your reputation. You can overcome that challenges with the whatsnext.gov, and that's a unique point for us.
Thanks, Sabre. That's really interesting, and I think there's a lot to come with this. You guys aren't slowing down anytime soon. Your comms team are very, very keen to send over, hey, we've got some new things coming for WhatsNX. I'm keen to find out, and I think our audience are as well, what's on the horizon for WhatsNX? What can we expect over the next kind of 6 months coming ahead?
So overall, in the last 6 months, we have completed thousands of pilots. You might think about our pilots like MVPs, thousands of MVPs with WhatsNX clients. So the excitement is there, and this is the momentum. You are going to see even more pilots turning into production. Already, IBM's Book of Business for WhatsNX and Generative AI almost doubled from third to fourth quarter 2023. So we are in first quarter of 2024. We cannot now, we didn't finalize the quarter yet. But this momentum is increasing in an accelerated way. So already those more of those pilots, more of those thousands of pilots that have been complemented will now be get into production, and more clients will see, we will see that more clients will be talking about how they are using WhatsNX this year. That is really incremental. And as we implement and see the positive outcome, more clients are reaching out to us. This is really key. And you are going to see more references in production, in successful production, which is showing huge ROI ratios. And of course, this is the overall area, but we have really exciting news about the new models that are going to be added onto WhatsNX.
I can't wait. Models are my jam, so I look forward to seeing what's to come. I'm sure my team will be keen to sit down and chat with you guys. I think AI Summit's in June now, so it'll be good to see some of the team there, and we'll talk about that then. But Ibra, it's been a pleasure. I know it's an awful lot to get through. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. It was a pleasure for me. And of course, looking forward to seeing you, your team, and everyone else at AI Summit. And I'll be very happy if anyone would like to reach out to discuss further.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.